Your participation is essential to our discussions on managing the Yukon River's vital salmon runs. My name is Serena Alstrom, and I'm the Executive Director of the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association. We'll cover key topics such as run assessments, environmental conditions, management strategies, and stakeholder feedback. We want to thank our funding partners, the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission and the Tana Chiefs Conference, for their support. These teleconferences facilitate communication across the 22-mile expanse of the Yukon River, enabling fishermen, processors, researchers, managers, and other users to exchange real-time information and engage in effective salmon management discussions. The teleconferences were designed to bridge communication gaps between local users and fishery managers. We aim to make these calls a platform for actionable feedback, providing insight and recommendations to management entities. Designing the topics of discussion and feedback format, we want to ensure these calls contribute to tangible improvements in fisheries management and provide updates on Yukon River research. We want to encourage fishers in the in-season survey communities to reach out to their local surveyor and share what they are seeing on the river. This program is a way for fishers to anonymously share their observations as well as their concerns or challenges with the managers and the rest of the river. The in-season communities include Alaganak, Mountain Village, Marshall, Russian Mission, Anzac, Muslia, Ruby, Tanana, Fort Yukon, and Eagle. I'd like to welcome all the new callers and our new board members as well. We encourage young fishers to participate in the calls to learn and engage in Yukon River fisheries. I ask all our participants today to please be respectful of one another. This space is to be used as a communication tool between all users of the Yukon River. By working together, we can foster positive outcomes when we support one another. Goyanit for all of you and your time and your participation. Like always, please press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. If you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to mute and unmute. Background noise and conversations are disruptive to callers who are sharing important information. I'd like to ask if there's any media on the line to please announce yourself. Do we have any of our government representatives or staff members on the call today?
This is Mike Wood, Alaska Board of Fisheries.
Welcome, Mike. We will start with the Yukon area managers from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I'll hand it over to Dina Jowen. Are you online?
Hi, Serena. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Hi, Serena. Actually, I'll go to the staff we've got back in the Anchorage office, Josh and or Zach, to give the assessment update, and then I can talk a little bit about management for summer season, and then turn it over to Matt and Bonnie for fall season. So, yeah, Josh or Zach, you want to give the update?
Yep. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm filling in for Fred West. My name is Josh Clark. I'm the assistant research biologist for summer season. Just to talk a little bit about what's going on with the fish right now. Currently, the Chinook salmon run at pilot station has been estimated at 49,149 fish, which is well below the historic cumulative average of 150,373. We're really getting near the three-quarter point of the run right now, and so it's unlikely that any of the escapement goals and the drainage are going to be met for Chinook salmon. Eagle sonar started counting about a week ago, and they currently have an estimated passage of 313 Chinook, which is well below the historic cumulative average of 1,162.
And then I would like to note that the other assessment projects are getting up and running. Chena and Salcha just started recently as well. So far, they've only counted, Chena has counted 86 Chinook salmon, but that's all we really have in the way for assessment for Chinook right now. Summer chum are also tracking well below average. At pilot station, we've currently estimated that there's 265,558 to have passed, which is well below the historic median of 1,372,616. So really at this point, with the pilot station numbers being past the midpoint, we're unlikely to meet the lower end of the drainage wide escapement goal of 500,000. Moving on to Anvik sonar, they've estimated passage at 9,964 chum salmon. This is well below the historical cumulative median of 185,257. Chena has counted 86 chum, and Salcha has counted 82. And these are both well below their historic cumulative averages and medians as well. So just going with that, it is looking pretty grim right now. And I'll pass this off to Dina in a second, but just reminding folks that most of our assessment projects are operating and are doing the best they can to count fish. There's just really not a lot out there. But if you have any questions, I'm here to answer them. Thanks.
Yeah, and thanks, Josh, for that update. This is Dina Jown with Fish and Game out here in Monarch. And so just an update for the management. Management, unfortunately, hasn't really changed since last week. We did put in salmon closures based on the early travel timing of Chinook, and then based on the run timing of the quarter and three-quarter points, we did have closures of all gillnets in districts announced. And as the run for Chinook salmon moves upriver, those closures of all gillnet mesh have been relaxed down here in the coast in District 1 and in District 2. And then tonight at 8 p.m. in District 3, folks can put their 4-inch or smaller mesh gillnets back in the water. And so just remind folks that when that closure of all gillnets expires, you can put your 4-inch or smaller mesh nets back in. They've got to be 60 feet or less and operated as a set net near shore. And we continue to encourage folks to put those nets in areas where you're not going to accidentally get any king or chum salmon, because we are really concerned about these runs. We're really trying to get as much fish up to their spawning grounds as possible. We were very much hoping that the summer chum run was going to come in better and that we were going to open up with dip nets for summer chum like we did last year, but it just hasn't really panned out. So far, the run just looks like it's going to come in below the bottom end of the escapement goal, and that's really unfortunate, and we were really hoping to see them bounce back like they have in the past, but that's just not what we're seeing this year. So for the remainder of the summer season, folks can fish with those 4-inch nets for non-salmon, try to get, you know, pike and sheafish, and if you get any pink and sockeye salmon, you can definitely keep those. But we always encourage folks to call into the toll-free hotline to get the information for your district. And that number is 1-866-479-7387. And you can also get the daily pilot station counts and lower Yukon test fishery counts. In the recent days, we've gotten pretty few fish caught in the lower Yukon test fishery, and just kind of indicating that there's not, unfortunately, another big group of chum coming in at this time. So with that, I'll turn it over to the fall season team, Matt Olson and Bonnie Borba up in the Fairbanks office, if they've got anything to add for a fall season update.
Yeah. Hi, Serena. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Yeah, my name is Matt Olson. I'm currently the acting fall season manager for the U.S. Department of Fish and Game. We just have a quick update today. Fall season management and assessment projects will start transitioning in the lower river starting on July 16th. Unfortunately, we don't have a finalized preseason projection for fall chum salmon yet, but it will likely be announced with the next advisory announcement or by the next year for a teleconference call. We do, however, expect the total run to be less than 300,000 and thus below the bottom end of the drainage line escapement goal. So that's about all I have right now. Thank you.
Great, thank you. I'll now turn it over to the Yukon Area Managers from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Holly, are you online?
I sure am, Serena. This is Holly Carroll with Fish and Wildlife Service, and I would just give a quick update that our fisheries team is back from the Andreevsky Weir site. We did successfully decommission that site and clean it up, and we still have one team out there that is working on the sonar, the Koyukuk feasibility sonar. That's really in the early stages of just exploring whether that river channel would support sonar so that we could get estimates of fish, mainly salmon and other whitefish, into the Koyukuk drainage. Again, that project's in the early stages, but our crew is out there working now, and they should be back within a week. And then the Tidrinjik sonar is the next project that we would operate for fall season, but crews won't launch for that until the very end of July, the 1st of August. So we'll give more updates on that later. And then I'll just stand by for other questions and comments that come up later. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Holly. I'll turn it over to the Department of Fisheries Oceans Canada. Do I have Jacqueline Kendall on the line?
Good afternoon, Serena. This is Jacqueline. Am I coming through okay?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jacqueline Kendall. I am the Acting Yukon River Operations Manager with the Department of Fisheries and Oceans. I'll start us off here with just a bit of a brief Canadian management update, and then I'll look to Luke Glover to provide a stock assessment and a bit of an environmental update. So in Canada, we have now finalized the 2025 Canadian Management Strategy, which we refer to as the Integrated Fisheries Management Plan. And it was, again, informed by the newly signed agreement, as well as recommendations from the Yukon Salmon Subcommittee, which resulted from consultations with Yukon First Nation governments and community members. So DFO has closed the recreational fishery for Chinook salmon for 2025, and the current long-term closures in the commercial and domestic, which is the non-Indigenous food fishery, remain in effect. And so, unfortunately as well, with the forecast being so far below the rebuilding target, there will be no opportunities to harvest Chinook salmon in the First Nation subsistence fishery again for 2025. So very brief update in terms of Canadian management. Not much has changed. So now I'll turn to Luke, if you don't mind, Luke, to step in and provide the stock assessment and environmental update.
Everyone, Luke Glover here. I'm the Acting Senior Biologist for Yukon River Operations for Fisheries and Oceans Canada. I'll
Luke,
start off with...
Can you speak up just a tad? You're coming in very faint. Thank you.
Sure. Can you hear me better there now?
Just a bit. I'm not sure if you're far away from your mic or not.
Sure. I'll just try to pop off my headset here and see if talking on the phone helps. I'll start off with the Porcupine River system. Our DFO technicians began counting sonar files June 29th with a full day count beginning on June 30th. The current cumulative count for Chinook salmon passing the Porcupine River sonar site is 102 fish as of July 6th. This project's now in its 14th year and provides estimates on Chinook and Chum salmon passage into the Canadian portion of the Porcupine River. Our DFO technicians have also traveled to Eagle, Alaska to support ADF&G in their operation of the Eagle assessment site, and counts have been underway since June 30th. In the coming weeks and leading into late July, a number of other Chinook assessment projects within the Canadian Yukon River will come online. Most of these are led and managed by Yukon First Nations, and updates will be provided as each progresses. Project managers of any Yukon First Nations are online today, and they wish to speak to their progress of their assessment projects. They can do so now, or I will continue on. Okay, a few updates that I am aware of on the other projects in the system is the Pelly River Sonar project is now operational. Sonar units deployed on both banks and Chinook salmon counts remain at zero as of July 7th. So aware that the Klondike assessment project is nearly operational with units in the water and they're just finalizing getting set up. Now on to some environmental conditions on the area. Past week, much of the Yukon has experienced unseasonably warm and dry weather, with daytime temperatures ranging from the low 20s to high 20s in many areas. This extended heat has contributed to ongoing low water levels in rivers and streams. Smoke from distant wildfires, particularly in Alaska and central Yukon, has intermittently affected air quality, though no major new have been reported locally. Low conditions have mirrored much of the broader Yukon region, hot and dry weather prevailing throughout the week. Daily highs reached up to 27 Celsius with limited precipitation and high UV indexes. Water levels on the Porcupine River remain low for this time of year, with water temperatures sitting around 18 degrees Celsius today. Thank you.
Thank you, Luke. We will now turn it over to organizational reports. Do I have anyone from the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission on the line?
Good afternoon. This is Jasmine.
Can you
hear me? Hi, hope everyone's doing well. So this past year, the Yukon River Fish Commission became a standalone nonprofit org. So we're officially a 501c3 with two employees, myself, Jasmine Vent, serving as the communications director, and Janessa Newman, who is our stewardship director. So recently, we've really just been closely following the rolling closures throughout the river and continuing our outreach efforts, really trying to keep communities informed and supported with that information. And in addition to tracking the closures, we've been sharing updates on the 4-inch mesh gillnet openings. So we understand that a lot of that information can be overwhelming, especially with a lot of the constant updates and changing conditions. So we're working to make it as clear and accessible as possible, that people have the information that they need. And so we've just been sharing updates on our Facebook at Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission and Instagram at Yukon River Salmon. You can also contact us at communications@yritfc.org. If you have any questions or need clarification on openings, closures, or gear requirements, please reach out. We are here to help. And we're also in the process of hiring an executive director. So we have our next meeting scheduled on the 16th to continue moving that forward. And, yeah, that's our update for this week. We're really trying to get more structure to the org still, since there's only two employees, trying to keep everything afloat and just trying to make sure we're getting this outreach to the communities in a culturally appropriate way. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jasmine. I'll turn it over to the BBAYK Coalition. Do we have anyone online to provide a report? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to Canadian or Council of Yukon First Nations. Elizabeth's not available to come online today, but she did provide a report, which I will give. We just attended a salmon community meeting in Old Crow last Friday. It was a hot day, and there was a good turnout for the meeting. There was salmon information and updates along with dinner and door prizes. There was a lot of discussion focused around the want to be out on the land fishing. However, the community will once again have a no net in the river during the Chinook interim runs. This will continue to create hardship for fishers as this is a fine community and food is expensive at the store. Most First Nations are now out in the field. There are stream surveys looking at migration barriers like beaver dams and log jams. Others are studying juvenile salmon as part of the restoration projects, and several sonar projects have started. This week is also the water board hearing for the White Horse Dam. So many First Nations will be part of this process. It is long with about 10 days scheduled for the meeting. This is the process needed for the dam to get a water license to continue operating, and it will set conditions that they need to follow for water. The water board came out of the land claims process in the Yukon and includes First Nations. There will also be a separate process and license for fishery impacts. Across the rest of the territory, fire activity is still high, but seems to be decreasing a little, and there are currently no road closures. Water levels in the south are low, but we are getting some cooler temperatures and rain, which is helping. Further north, water levels are closer to average. She was in Pelly a few weeks ago, which is halfway between Dawson and Whitehorse, and traditional knowledge indicators showed that the run was going to be late and it was going to be a bad run. This was based off berries, sap, and ice formations. We are also entering the season of fish camps, salmon celebrations, and gatherings. These are not the same with no nets in the river and no Yukon River salmon, but First Nations are instead providing sockeye from the Taku River in British Columbia and using these instead. They don't smoke the same, but at least it is allowing for something. And that concludes her report. I'll now turn it over to the Yukon Salmon Subcommittee. Do we have Taylor on the line?
Hi, Serena. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, it's always hard to follow Elizabeth's updates because she's so thorough and I have much of the same things. But we were also in Old Crow for the meeting. It was really great to get back there and to hear from the community and to give some updates on the run and activities that we've been up to. We are getting ready for our July 18th in-season meeting, and there are virtual options available if anybody would like to join on Zoom. I can send an agenda. It'll also be posted on our website and on our Facebook page, so if anybody is interested in joining, you can find that information there. We'll hear updates from Yukon First Nation governments on the projects that they have going on throughout the summer, as well as from the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada on, you know, some of those mid-season updates along the Yukon River, and hear from other organizations on some work that they're doing. And then we also just have our administrative tasks to handle as well. Like Elizabeth said, the weather has been warm. Southern Lakes area is starting to increase water. The water is going up a bit, so that's good. The fires are being held in Dawson, so hopefully that fire activity continues to decrease. Not much else than that.
Great, thank you, Taylor. A brief update for Yurtva. The Eagle Biotech training will begin at the end of next week. We do have 15 participants that will be attending. Unfortunately, we will not be hosting the training in St. Mary's this year, and we will plan on hosting it next year in June of 2026. Yurtva has partnered with Ruby Tribe and YKSD, Yukon Koyukuk School District, for the annual Ruby Culture Camp, which is currently being held this week. Yurtva staff are assisting with elder interviews, the salmon cycle, water quality monitoring, and various other activities at the camp. Our initiative focuses on supporting three communities in establishing a community culture camp in 2026. We have a team that will also be traveling out to Beaver next week to work with the tribe and conduct water quality samples. That's a very brief update on our end. I'll now turn it over to the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission, Truce Vicente. Are you online?
Hi, good afternoon, Serena. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Okay. Thanks, Serena. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Therese Vicente, Policy and Programs Director with the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission. Serena asked me to provide an update about our work as a cooperating agency with the Tanana Chiefs Conference on the Chum Salmon Bycatch Environmental Impact Statement. So I can just provide a quick summary of that, though I'm happy, Serena, if there are other things you wanted me to share, just let me know.
Okay,
thanks. I appreciate that. So there's been an environmental impact statement process ongoing at the North Pacific Fishery Management Council and with the National Marine Fisheries Service, or NOAA Fisheries, for about 2 years now to evaluate current management of chum salmon bycatch in the Bering Sea pollock trawl fishery and potentially set new management measures for chum bycatch. So currently, right now, until any new regulations are put in place, there are no caps on the number of chum salmon that can be taken as bycatch or caught and discarded or donated because they cannot be kept or sold by the pollock trawlers in the Bering Sea. There are caps for Chinook salmon bycatch that's managed differently. I'm just talking about chum salmon bycatch. Is that the focus of the action right now? The pollock industry itself sets incentive plan agreements, or IPAs, to determine in season their own chum salmon avoidance measures, which include identifying quote-unquote hot spots where they're seeing a lot of chum salmon bycatch and avoiding those areas, things like that. But those are set internally and approved by the federal agency. And that's the only chum bycatch avoidance measure that's in place at this time. So 2 years ago, after a lot of public pressure and really high chum bycatch levels in 2021, and then all the pressure after that from the public and tribes, especially in Western and Interior Alaska, the council initiated a National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, process to examine chum salmon bycatch. And after several iterations of session papers and preliminary draft documents, and after bringing in our Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission as a cooperating agency, which basically means we requested to be included as a special expert about chum salmon abundance and life history and the uses of chum salmon on the Kuskokwim. So we're able to participate with the federal agency, bring in traditional knowledge, bring in information from our rivers, review some sections of the documents and analyses to make sure they are accurate. So we've been able to kind of participate at the table with the council staff and the federal agency, National Marine Fisheries Service, their staff. So we've been doing that for close to 2 years now. Alaska Department of Fish and Game is another cooperating agency because of their special expertise as a salmon manager throughout the state. And then Tanana Chiefs Conference is another tribal cooperating agency, similarly to us, bringing in traditional knowledge, information from the ground and from the tribes. So after several years of discussion papers and preliminary draft analyses, the North Pacific Council met in February of this last year to review the latest draft document, draft EIS, Environmental Impact Statement. Hear testimony from the public and read the written comments submitted by the public, and then determine next steps. And I'm sure many listeners were at that meeting or watched it virtually or followed up with it. But essentially what the council decided to do was to revise the 5 potential management alternatives on the table for Chum Salmon Bycatch and recommend the publication of the draft EIS by National Marine Fisheries Service. So this is effectively moving the process along, which is good because many people have been asking for action on this for many, many years now. And this means that we are close to final action for this. But before I get ahead of myself, so twofold here. I'll talk about the alternatives briefly first. So these are the pathways that the council could choose from to set management for chum salmon bycatch in the Bering Sea pollock trawl fishery. Alternative one is status quo or no action. That's always an option in these processes. I guess I can't speak for the council what they'll choose, but I think they will choose an action alternative and not that alternative one. Alternative two is a cap on chum salmon bycatch across the Bering Sea. It would be between 100,000 chum salmon up to 550 chum salmon per year. So once the different pollock trawl sectors hit that cap, they would stop fishing. Alternative three is also a cap in the entire Bering Sea in place each year. The cap would be between 100,000 chum salmon and 550 chum salmon, but it would only be in place in years after there was low abundance of chum salmon in western and interior Alaska, either just on the Yukon River, using the Yukon River as kind of the indicator for how chum are doing across like the western Alaska region, or looking at the different abundance thresholds from the Norton Sound region, from Yukon summer and fall chum, and then from the Kuskokwim. So if there was low abundance in one or more of those regions, or just in the Yukon, if they choose just to use the Yukon, then there would be a cap the following year. If there's quote-unquote high abundance of chum, there would not be a cap in place the following year. That's alternative three. Alternative four would add 6 more requirements to the pollock industry's incentive plan agreements. They're contractual agreements to avoid salmon bycatch that are in place right now. It would add 6 more requirements to regulation. The industry has been using many of those requirements for the past couple years since they hit that near all-time high chum bycatch of over 550,000 chum in 2021. But this would make sure they couldn't walk those back because it would be put into regulation. That's alternative four. And then alternative five is it's been tweaked. It was tweaked at that February meeting, so it's new. We don't have a full analysis of it yet. But the goal of alternative five is to create a migratory corridor for chum salmon in the Bering Sea. There's a couple different kind of pathways within that alternative itself, but there's options to have this kind of wide swath of the Bering Sea, not the entire Bering Sea though, like alternatives 2 and 3, but mainly the areas where the inshore pollock trawlers are fishing and some of the catcher processors. there'd be a cap between 50,000 chum and 350,000 chum. Then they have some other options within that to make it a smaller area, or to have it linked to Yukon River summer and fall chum abundance. So kind of like alternative three, if there's low abundance of chum in the Yukon, the following year would have a lower cap or a cap put in place. If not, then there would not be a cap the following year. So there's a lot in that alternative, and since it's fairly new, that's about the best explanation I could give right now. But it's important to keep in mind, you know, some of these alternatives are mutually exclusive, but many of them could be combined. So the council could not choose alternative one for no action with any other alternative. They also could not choose alternative two for that cap between 100,000 and 550,000 chum each year with alternative three, which is the cap but only after low abundance years. They would have to choose one of those. But they could choose, say, alternative two for a cap across the Bering Sea, plus alternative four for new regulations for the industry and their agreements, plus parts of alternative five for a more area-specific migratory corridor cap. So where we are now, the federal agency and council staff, as well as cooperating agencies like our Cusco Fish Commission, have been working over the past couple months to refine the preliminary draft EIS that we saw in February into a draft EIS. And that, I just heard this morning, is still in the works. The goal is to have that published to the Federal Register by early fall. So there's a lot going on right now with the council and the federal agency, as I think a lot of federal entities are grappling with, just funding constraints and uncertainties. So I know the analysts are working really hard to get that published as soon as possible. And I'm sure YIRDFA will share out the news, we'll share out the news once it's published, because that will kickstart a 60-day comment period for tribes, for nonprofits, for individuals, for agencies to provide comment to the council and National Marine Fisheries Service, which alternative or alternatives, plural, they think will be best and they want to recommend be chosen. So we anticipate that comment period to the draft EIS to be coming soon, hopefully by the end of August, though it's still TBD. And then the council is trying to determine now when they'll hold the meeting to hear reports and presentations on the draft EIS, hear about the public comments, and then determine final action. The latest I've heard is that could be in December of this year, during the council's regular meeting, which may or may not be virtual or in Anchorage. It's still TBD because they're having a lot of funding issues. It may also be in February 2026. And I know the council is also aware of the Area M Board of Fish meeting occurring in February 2026 as well. So, again, many people will spread the word once we hear when it is, so that folks interested in attending the meeting and testifying or just observing will have that information. But until then, the federal agency, NOAA Fisheries, National Marine Fisheries Service, should be open to requests for tribal consultation from tribal governments and tribal serving consortia. So if that's something your government is interested in, your tribe, our Cusco Fish Commission is happy to help with that, or Shirtana Chiefs Conference or YIRDFA. And I'm also happy to, talk with folks, talk with tribes or communities and, you know, share more and kind of walk through this in more detail, or just spread the word more. My direct line is 907-545-5022, or you can email me, Therese, T-E-R-E-S-E, at kritsb.org. So, yeah, we, at the Cusco Fish Commission, we certainly hope something will be done soon to limit the number of chum that are taken as bycatch in the Bering Sea each year. And I could share, too, if you give me just a moment, just so folks have the latest numbers. The pollock fishery and all groundfish fisheries are in their bee season right now, which is starts June 10 and then runs until I think November. Oh, excuse me, it runs through the end of the year or until the different fisheries reach their quotas or their total allowable catches for the year. But this is typically when we see the most chum salmon bycatch occur, when we see it uptick. And as of last Thursday, July 3rd, groundfish fisheries in the Bering Sea have reported catching 3,080 chum salmon as bycatch, with most of those coming from the pollock fishery, which is reported catching 2,318 chum salmon as bycatch. And those are not all Alaskan chum. On average, about 12 to 20% of those, so maybe like one in five or so, one in six chum, are headed back to rivers across western and interior Alaska from Kotzebue all the way down to Bristol Bay. So we keep tabs on these numbers and we share them out. To check out our website, cuscosalmon.org, for more information or to sign up for our newsletter that we share information out on. So I'll stop there, Serena. Sorry for taking so much time, but hopefully that's helpful for folks. And I'm happy to hang on for a little bit and help answer questions if anyone has any. Oriana.
Well, thank you very much, Therese, for your update and your information. Greatly appreciated. We will post information about the council and bycatch on our website and share it out on our social media accounts. And Therese will be available for at least 15 more minutes to take any questions. We'll now go over to the community level reports. I'll be calling my district. I'm calling on the coastal communities of Chiva, Cooper Bay, and Scammon Bay. Do we have anyone online with any questions or comments? Just a reminder to press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. And if you are using your mobile device or your mute feature on your mobile device, you will still need to press star 6 to unmute. Again, calling on the coastal communities of Chiva, Cooper Bay, and Scammon Bay. Moving on to District Y1, Nunam Iqwa, Lagnak Imanak, and Kotlik. Again, calling on District Y1, Nunam Iqwa, Lagnak Imanak, and Kotlik. Moving on to District Y2, Mountain Village, Pictus Point, St. Mary's Pilot Station, or Marshall. Just a reminder to press L6 to unmute.
Hey, Serena.
Ooh, we got two people. Let's go with Maddie Beans.
Oh, hey, Serena. This is Maddie doing your water temp out here in St. Mary's. We got a surface temp of 63.3 today, 12:30, and it went up quite a bit since last week. Last week was 57.9, I think, and it's a big difference in a week. So it's been fairly warm here. I've been going up the Andreski River lately because it's been good weather, and one thing I'm seeing that's encouraging is a lot more seagulls on the river, a lot more sign of some salmon in the river, and which is good because the last few years I haven't seen that around here. So that's a good sign maybe, and I don't know who's got nets out, if anybody put nets out 4-inch, I haven't been on the Yukon in a while. So that's it from around here. Talk to you guys later.
Hey, thank you, Maddie. Calling on District Y2, Mountain Village, Pictus Point, St. Mary's, Pilot Commissioner Marshall.
Hi, Serena.
Hi, Nita. Go ahead.
Nothing really going on around here, just haven't really seen anybody with nets out here yet. As I say, so Net River, Stone River, but I'm not too sure, the 4-inch net. And people are just waiting to hear, so there's a Christmas this year, and people are waiting for the berries to ripe. And that's about it. But it's been hot this week, so... They keep saying that this will be a little bit of weather for drying fish, but they still got to wait on the way when it's still open. Thank you.
Thank you, Nika. Do we have anyone else from Y2?
Hi, Serena. This is Martin Kelly.
Hi, Martin.
Yeah, I just want to have a couple comments here. We have a really nice day here at Pilot. It's nice and sunny. The temp here is like somewhere about 64, 65 degrees. You know, it's been pretty cool summer. River conditions still pretty high, and you know, there's a lot of fire in the interior, and we're not collecting a lot of rain in the whole entire state. The state's on fire, but the Yukon River at Pilot's pretty damn high, so you know, I've reported in the past our big schools of salmon, that could be like a nuclear submarine going up the river, maybe a couple of them. And they've shown, I've seen footage on other parts of tributaries going up into the interior. They've all reported 102 salmon going past Porcupine. That's a long ways. It's, you know, right past the border. So that's a really good thing. I just wanted to comment that a fact, you know, I don't anticipate on sitting and listening with the conferences too much more. I just have a lot to really fall behind, and my camp is right at the edge of the bank. So I just wanted to mention something about, you know, the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission and their native leaders over there utilizing their, you know, their sovereign intent to survive, their sovereign immunity, you know, their rights to subsist. But we can do it here with our tribal communities. We have tribal jurisdiction. You know, we are entitled to freely provide access to all salmon species, you know, originally practiced prior to Western culture inception, you know. This is our life. We only take what we need. I'm sure everybody's heard that they've slashed, what, 40 billion or trillion in Medicaid, Medicare, and SNAP. How the heck are we supposed to provide for our families when they can't even get health care? You know, it's going to be a lot tougher. It's our food security. We should be able to take what we need when we need. We're getting smarter. You know, I sat through one of the fisheries meetings, and they were talking about kilotons. And I didn't know that a kiloton was 500 more pounds than just a ton, 2,000 pounds. You know, they utilize these big words to try and, you know, brush something under the rug when it comes to bycatch. You know, it's just, we're being cheated. But elsewhere in the entire state of Alaska, if you buy Alaska state permit, you're able to get salmon. Even non-resident. Is that what us natives need to do here? Buy a license to get our fish?
Pardon?
I'm just venting. It's been a while, so. You know, it's been since 2019 that we've been able to at least get some decent numbers of salmon to put away, dry and cut and freeze, you know. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. I appreciate you calling in. It's good to hear your voice. I just wanted to know if you had a question or anything about what was presented today.
I'm not really certain, you know. I just wanted to jump on and hear a little bit more reports. As you know, if I hear there's salmon up in Porcupine, that's good enough news for me. That's a long ways, you know. Salmon tend to swim, 12, 13 miles per day, so they're already up there. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Martin. Please send the call of listening in when you can. We will move on to District Y3, Rishi Mission, Holy Cross, and Shagluk.
Hey, Serena. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Hey, yeah, this is Eric in St. Mary's. Yeah, I totally understand Martin's frustration. People are worried about food security, and there's not a lot of help from the state and federal government to help what's happening to all these villages in Lower Yukon right now. The culture has been greatly impacted by not fishing and the economy, and we're struggling dearly. Water's high. My wife's fishing with 4-inch and catching humpies up close to the beach. And some whitefish, the past, 2 days now. I listening to the lady, I'm sorry, I apologize, I didn't catch her name, from the Kuskokwim Intertribal, but on this EIA stuff, I guess for all the tribes on both Yukon and Kuskokwim, we always, you know, just my 2 cents worth, real quick, We're missing something when in the EIS, and that's we focus on bycatch, a salmon, king salmon. But what's really been impacting that nobody wants to talk about is we're dragging the bottom of the ocean that's affecting the food chain, which feeds our salmon. And the stuff that's on the bottom that goes up the food chain to our chum and king salmon are being impacted, and that needs to be factored in. And it's a different food source than what sockeyes are. Sockeyes are doing well, but, you know, they're feeding on a different type of plankton. But I just real briefly looking over that EIS, that's really missing, and that we need to work together both on Yukon and Kuskokwim to focus on that. Dragging the bottom is impacting all the way up the food chain, all the way to, you know, your 1-2 fish out in the ocean until they go to deeper water. And we need to get those protected, those areas protected. The reefs are all being destroyed outside the Kuskokwim and the Yukon. And that's my 2 cents. And again, I know management's trying, but we have to find a solution. And this is one of the solutions I see. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Eric. Noted, and we'll bring it up during the weekly meetings on Thursday. Calling on District Y3, Russian Mission Holy Cross Shagluk.
Hello.
Yes.
Hey, guys. This is Basil. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I hope you all had a safe 4th of July. This is actually the first 4th of July that we weren't able to, or we didn't have to, or this is the first 4th of July that didn't fall on a Tuesday for us to do our teleconference stuff. ever since I've been on Geertva, doing this, being the surveyor guy, we had to call in on 4th of July, so I just, throw that out there. I noticed it's the first 4th that we didn't have the teleconference. But anyways, here at Rushing the Waters, dropping slowly, but seems like it's holding pretty steady. There's been barges bringing rocks and fuel here for the construction that's about to boom up. We've been pretty chilly, waking up every day. There's either fog or smoke or something all around us every day. Been lows in the 50s, uppers. The hotter days are up in the upper 70s, and like, but today is 65-ish. There's been a lot of kids swimming. There's been some humpies caught. There's been a lot of fishing activity with the rod and reel. The kids, we do it every year, but there's been a little more effort this year due to the no 4-inch nets and heavy restrictions. People trying to just get some food for the table, not really for the camp. The one thing that all the kids and myself noticed that way up in these, around here, the creeks on the north side of the river, they all go back into the mountains and they're all rock-fed streams, popular grayling fishing spots and trout, whitefish, and all those species of freshwater fish that feast on salmon eggs, we go into those creeks and try to get them. But these last few years, there's been not much sign of spawning salmon in our local streams. And we noticed the bears' reaction to that because we respect them. And then this year, there's, like Maddie said down there, there's been a lot of or more salmon showing up into these local spawning streams. More humpies and more sockeye look like reds mostly filling up these creeks and spawning. So that's a good sign. But food security is a big issue, a big concern. It's an issue everywhere, but it's a big concern here now this year more than ever. Nobody was fishing with the 4-inch net up until today. There are some folks that went out and set their nets. We're finally open today. And there were some people that were dip netting for sockeye, and they reported to me that probably 1 in 10 or 12-ish sockeyes that they cut up had a pus sac in them. One of the fishermen, fish cutting ladies told me one of the adult female sockeyes that she cut open didn't have any eggs. It was, didn't look spawned out. Didn't, we could tell the difference between a spawned out fish and a one going up that way. So something strange that female, adult female sockeye didn't have any eggs in it. So that got their, all our attention. We noticed that the bycatch numbers continuously exceed the amount of fish coming into the main stem Yukon River. We know that the bycatch numbers that they give out are not only for our river, but, you know, when you divide that by two or three, that's still more fish caught out there than coming into our streams. We respect the rules and regulations. We follow them because, you know, nobody wants these salmon back more than us. And we understand that part, you know, we do our part too. We just are wondering when this is all these harsh rules and regulations going to apply everywhere that these salmon are. You know, they spend 80% of their life out in the sea, so my point is, you know, we're managing our lifestyle is not bringing these salmon back. We have to try to help protect them. But hampering our lifestyle as much as we could to help these salmon is getting wearing pretty thin on us. And, we're at that part of the situation. But, we noticed that on years that there's no salmon and no spawning salmon in these local streams, that the bears get real aggressive and they become hunters year-round. So you see them in a moose, or when you're moose hunting, they come after you, you have to down them. So there's been a lot of that happening around here these last few years, but this year there's a lot of bear sign in these creeks and they're just, you know, back to their fishing ways. There's been, for the last few years, there's been some extreme measures taken to, or some families took some extreme measures to subsist salmon for the winter. Some people going over, bringing their families to the Kuskokwim or even far down as Briscoe Bay for the summer to subsist and bring their salmon home. But this year, we all know the price of airplane tickets a little higher than usual, so not many families were able to do that. Even with a full-time job, it's pretty tough. But other than that, that's pretty much it for me. And everybody is happy for the 4-inch opening, so we're able to go out and set our 4-inch net, get a week's worth of whitefish and humpies and whatever else we'll catch, because sometimes we work during the week and then can't go rod and reel every day. So that reel helps for food on the table, and thank you.
Thank you, Basil. Do we have anyone else in District 3, Russian Mission, Holy Cross, Shagluck? Just a reminder to press *6 to unmute and mute your line. We'll move on to District Y4A, Anvik, Grayling, Kaltag, Nalato, and Kaikuk. If you are using the mute feature on your mobile device, please, you'll still need to press *6 to unmute. Calling on District Y4A, Anvik, Grayling, Kaltag, Nalato, and Kaikuk.
Hello, Serena. Yes. This is Ken Chase at Anvik.
Hi, Ken. Go ahead.
Yeah, I I guess I'm not going to report too much, but I spent 4th of July up the Angus River, which is one of the biggest spawning for chum salmon in the area in the north part of this country. And it's pitiful. It's criminal what I see up there. I didn't see one chum salmon. 4th of July is usually our peak run for chum on the Anrik River historically. We used to get from 1954 when I started first fishing until about 10 years ago, we had a million fish sometimes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello?
Yes, okay. We can.
All right, I had heard some noise there, but the river there itself, I noticed that the color of the water in the Anrik River, I was 30 miles up, and I was checking different streams that fish used to come into that spawned and didn't observe any kind of fish in those areas. But the strange thing to me was the color of the river water was sort of brownish yellow. And for this time of the year, it's awful strange for Anrik River to be like that. I've never seen it like that before. It's usually a freshwater, clear water river. So I don't know whether it's a upriver runoff from the hills or some places corroding the river. I don't know, but that was one observation I had. And I'd like to, at this point, to bring in the comment about Shagluk being omitted from our four villages here that's into the Yukon Y3. And I don't know how that came about, but historically, we like to see Shagluk within our other three villages, you know, even on the boundaries of the fishing. And since there's no one speaking from Shagluk, Holy Cross, or Anrik, I feel I have to say something in the subsistence area because I work with and for the fish and wildlife refuges, the Noko, the Kaikuk, Nawitna, and Kanuti, four refuges within the interior. I work as a refuge resource information for resources, and this fishing thing has got to be a pretty much time taken by me is to try to get people knowledgeable of what's going on and being helpful and trying to understand what the resource is doing and why. And it's hard for me even to follow at some times, you know, and we want to be critical and you know, just complain about it. We want to try to get some more work to help people to understand it. Anrik River chums this year, 9,964. Like I said, that's criminal. I mean, Anrik itself has never, even Shagluk and Grayling, when they used to be on, Grayling used to be on the Noko River, they all fished. Our biggest fish was the chum salmon, the summer chum. We caught some kings, but we never targeted them like we started doing in later years. And, you know, the four villages took a lot of chums, and especially out the Anrik River, and we never had a really problem with that. And I think the fish wheel problem is another one. I just found out yesterday that fish wheels are not allowed as gear this year, and Matt Olson was on earlier, and traditionally we use fish wheels in this region, and I'm going to work to try to get that back on the use of restricted gear if that's what it takes. But there's nothing that we should be left out on if we want to do our subsistence fishing, and trying to take away that fish wheel is not a thing that's going to stay on. I also wanted to get one answer on fish, and then on the Yukon River when they pass into Canada, is if the Canadian researchers are, what's the fat content, the size, and the percent of age
that's crossing into Canada now from other years. You know, there's, I'm no marine biologist. I don't understand all that stuff, but I'd like to know those things on the content and the fat, because comments I made on the Kuskokwim fishing last week, and why it's so good over there on the Cusco, and why it's so close to the Yukon, and we're not getting anything. And the whole Bering Sea, I don't understand where the boundaries are called the Bering Sea. I hear they're saying the Bering Sea. Well, does that go all the way down to Cold Bay and up to Barrow, or where's the boundaries for that Bering Sea? Especially when you start talking about trying to find that chum problem and help bring them back. So thank you. That's all I have.
Hi, Ken. This is Dina John with the Alaska Department of Fishing Game. I guess I've maybe got a little bit of follow-up and maybe some further questions. The Anoka River closures were announced. We've been announcing them when we put out the announcements for District 3. And so right now, their 4-inch or smaller mesh gill nets are closed, but we'll reopen at 8 p.m. on July 10th. And as for fish wheels, we did discuss that a bit this season. And if the summer chum run had come in stronger, we would have, you know, done what we did last year, which was to open selective gear types like dip nets, beat seines, and manned fish wheels for summer chum salmon. But the run just didn't pan out, and so we've left all those gears closed just to try to keep, keep them from impacting the salmon as they go upriver. So hopefully that helps to answer some of your questions.
Okay, so then the comment on shagluk is, the concern there is it's bunched in with the unit three, which is really part of District 4. In fact, it should be even separate from it, because it's a separate river. And Fish and Game has no idea really of what all, in quantity, how much fish goes up there, you know, different species. So I think it's just not right for them to be lumped into the three area.
Yeah, thanks for that. We did announce them with District 3, but actually their dates of their closures do match up with District 4. So District 4A Lower and the Anoka River both can put their 4-inch nets back out at 8 p.m. on the 10th. We do know that there's kind of a difference in miles between when the fish enter that river and when they would get closer to shagluk. So just kind of a little bit of looking at timing when fish might be there. And on the Yukon, as it is managed, when a district is closed, all the rivers that flow into that district also close. We are really concerned about the salmon that do go off into a lot of little side streams and spawn. And so that's why when districts close, like everything that drains into it also closes.
Yeah, so what's the thinking again on fish wheels for the region? Is that going to be included? I'm like, once they, after July 10th or 11th, whatever, they start looking at the fall chum, and toward the end of the fall chum, when they get red salmon, Cisco whitefish, and those other ones that we used to catch in the fish wheel, we'd still like to be able to do that. But if that's what's going on there?
Yeah, I'll defer that question to Matt Olson. He can answer what the plans are for fall season more accurately.
Yeah, excuse me. Hi, Ken. So for fall season, that has been a topic of discussion recently. So we don't have a final decision on the use of fish wheels yet during the fall season, but that'll be ironed out here shortly. I would say that the state of the summer run and the projected state of the fall run is also going to be very poor. So I think it's likely that the same reasoning that Dina laid out there with wanting to protect those the last of the kind of migrating summer chum and the beginning of the migrating fall chum run would warrant some limiting of the fish wheel gear. But remains to be seen to what extent. So thanks for your input on that one, though. We do appreciate the comment.
Okay, on then my other question would be on silvers or the coho itself, what goes on there? What's the restrictions on those?
So while we don't have a formal forecast for coho, we do anticipate that it's going to be another below average run. The parent year for this year's run was very poor. So we are likely going to start closed for coho until we see a sufficient number of fish, you know, that would support opening up, you know, retention for coho.
Okay, the reason I ask that is we have a river that's south of Anvik, you know, the Bonzilla, that's about 10 miles south of us, and that spawns a lot of coho in the fall time, late September on that river, and that's never been acknowledged, and we brought it up several times, but it's never been really brought to us as to what the plan is for that, or if there's any kind of restrictions or anything on that.
Sure. Yeah, and, you know, lately in recent seasons, with the restrictions, you know, going late into the fall season there, those have been maintained for coho until restrictions relax to the overwinter standard where it goes back to 7.5-inch mesh 24/7 after the fall chum and coho have already passed. So likely will be the same this year, but I am taking notes here. So if you could repeat the name of that river, I can look a little deeper into it.
Bonzilla River.
Gotcha. Thank you.
And, thank you. I just think that, you know, as hard time as we're having for fish here, salmon is, we try to scrape up every little one that's available, try to make use of it, you know, and I'm not trying to encourage anybody to go out and start trying to unlawfully catch them, but, you know, if they're there and there's not much regulation on them, you know, we'd like to take a look at it.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for bringing it to our attention. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
And to address your question about the Bering Sea, so there's two, it's split into two. There's a northern Bering Sea and the eastern Bering Sea. And so the Bering Sea, eastern Bering Sea stretches from Bristol Bay to False Pass and goes north and covers the Purbloff Islands up towards St. Matthew Islands. And the northern Bering Sea area is around St. Lawrence Island. And that's
okay. Important. All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Do we have anyone else from District Y4A? Anvik, Grayling, Kaltag, Nalato, or Kaikuk?
Hello, can you hear me? This is Shirley Grayling.
Yes, Shirley, go ahead.
I have a question for the biologist. What's the cutoff point for morality on the water temperatures in these spawning streams?
Hi, this is Holly Carroll, Fish and Wildlife Service. I think I understand your question, but could you repeat it about the cutoff for what? For sampling, or what are you asking about the salmon and temperatures?
No, we've been having a lot of hot weather, and somebody down the way said that the temperature was 63. I'm wondering, when do the fry start dying at what temperature in these spawning streams?
Oh, that's a tough one. So I don't know if I have data specifically related to fry, but studies that we've done for salmon start indicating pretty serious heat stress that starts at 16 degrees C, and 18 degrees C is known to be pretty bad for salmon. Of course, I don't have a converter right in front of me, but, yeah, we're starting to talk about 65 degrees and up starts to be pretty bad, and a lot of our sampling protocols. For instance, if the water gets warmer than that, we usually stop sampling the salmon because of the stress involved when they're encountering those warmer waters. But one thing that long-term studies have shown us too, so for instance, it kind of depends on the location. So there's an expert who studied heat stress on the Yukon and the tributaries, Vanessa Von Biele with USGS. And she actually found that, like, salmon going back to the Chena and Salsha, they're actually really used to the warmer water temperatures. And so we're not really sure how these warmer temps affect all life stages. But certainly, once we start getting above 65 degrees, there could be the chance for heat stress, basically. Thank you. That was my question.
And we'll have Dr. Vanessa Von Biele on a call to talk about heat stress before the season ends. So stay tuned. Last call for District Wide 4A, Anvik, Grayling, Caltag, Nalato, Kaikuk. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute. Okay, moving up the Kaikuk River, Huslia, Hughes, Alkakit, Alatsal, Bettles.
Hello?
Yes.
Hey, this is Ted Kruger from Anvik. I just want to get some clarification on the fish wheel. If that fish wheel is manned, can we still run that thing for whitefish and sheepfish?
Hi, thanks, Ted. This is Dina John with Fishing Game. So for the summer season, we decided to leave fish wheels closed to help prevent any kind of incidental contact with kings and prevent any mortality with kings. But I'll turn it over to talk more about fall season.
Well, historically, you don't catch kings in front of Anvik in a fish wheel. You catch chum, whitefish, sheepfish, pike. And the community, Anvik tribal, had built a brand new fish wheel this year in hopes to catch some fish for the people here in Anvik who are hadn't had any fish in how many years, and we want to run that fish wheel.
Yeah, thanks. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry if I cut you off there.
Oh, yeah, we just like to catch, if you're manning a fish wheel, every salmon that comes in there can be thrown out back into the river and just keep the sheepish, whitefish, and pike. These people can't wait all summer till fall time when the ice starting to run to catch a few fish. I mean, it takes time to dry these, and the summer months are the time that we have to dry these fish properly. And another thing is they're saying that we can keep fish humpies. My dogs wouldn't even eat humpies. How do you expect humans to eat humpies?
Yeah, thank you for your comments.
You guys are feeding us dog food that dogs wouldn't even eat. And historically, that Anvik River held 1.5 to 3 million chums every year. We're trying to preserve what we have left, but what are you guys doing out in the ocean to preserve? We save these fish and they go out to the ocean, then they destroy them out there.
Yeah, this is, again, this is Matt Olson with the Last Part Fishing Game. For fall season fish wheel use, thank you for those comments and kind of it'll add context to kind of our decision or the discussion we're going to have about what we're going to, you know, do in terms of the extent of, you know, being able to allow fish wheels for non-salmon harvest. One way or the other, neither summer chum, kings, nor fall chum or coho are going to be allowed to be kept out of fish wheels unless the numbers, you know, kind of drastically improve. But in terms of being able to harvest other species, non-salmon species, or sockeye or pink salmon, that is yet to be determined.
Yeah, I hope we could do something with these fish wheels because, you know, that's the way to catch fish. I don't see any difference than a dip net. And that's my gripe. Thank you.
Thank you, Ted. We'll move up to Kaiser River. Do we have anyone from Huslia, Hughes, Alkakit, Alatna, or Biddles?
Hello, this is Charlene Bent in Huslia.
Hi, go ahead.
We haven't really had anybody fishing here. We do have two fire crews out, and they're coming in for a couple days and then going back out. We have culture camp going and a lot of people working, so there's not much fishing going on here.
Thanks, Charlene. Again, calling on any communities on the Craycook River, Huslia, Hughes, Alkakit, Alatna, or Biddles. Just a reminder to press *6 to unmute. We'll move on to District Y4 ANC, Galena and Ruby. Hearing none, we'll move on to District Y5 A, B, C, and D, Tanana, Rampart, Stevens Village, Beaver, Birch Creek, Fort Yukon, Chalkeetsik, Vinitai, and Arctic Village, Circle, and Eagle.
Hello, Serena. This is Stan Zray in Tanana.
Hey, Stan. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm at Rapids right now. We make a cutoff. I've been cut off about a dozen times so far. But so we'll see. I'll check here. Water is dropping, but somewhat high. There's occasional drift. There's about five people in the Tanana Rapids area that have fished prior to this closure, mostly just to feed dogs. There's no food or very little being put up. It's mostly just a few fish to feed, keep the dogs fed. There's hardly anybody at any of the camps. Only a couple of camps populated now that the closure is in effect. Very small numbers. A number of people have had bear break-ins. There's been three in the rapids, including my own cabin. My son, his wife, and three-year-old girl were chased into their cabin and had to press the door to keep the bear coming in. Finally, the door, the bear got distracted by two dogs and was fighting with them. My son ran to the boat, got a gun, and shot it. So it's been pretty crazy with the bears around here. This is a common bear time for, they all come out of the hills and go to the spawning creeks and there's no salmon in the spawning creeks. And just as a note for the past, you still here? Are you still on the phone there, Serena?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah. For the past 4 years, not a single chum salmon or spawning bed has been found in the best spawning creek in the Rapids area called Bear Creek. And I usually report on this every year. And again, it's early, but there should be salmon spawning in it right now. Again, there is not any been seen yet. That's all I have.
Great. Thank you, Stan. Calling on District Y5, A, B, C, and D. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute.
Serena, Andy, can you hear me?
Yes, Andy, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Up here around Eagle, river levels are a little bit on the high side, but it's slowly dropping, very similar to what Stan reported, occasional drift coming down. Water temperatures are, yesterday here were about 67 degrees. Nobody fishing in this area. We're shut down right now. I'm sorry I came in a little late. I don't know what the Eagle sonar count was, but I would assume there should be a few salmon coming by now. Traditionally, right around 4th of July is when they show up. I really appreciated hearing the comments from people, and I really wanted to make a few comments about what Eric Weingart was bringing up on the trawl fleet touching bottom and degrading the habitat. I totally agree with that. I think it's a real concern. And I also wanted to, again, remind people that hatchery production throughout the entire North Pacific and the Gulf is having impacts on the ecosystem equally. And I believe that that's, from my opinion, one of the higher priorities we need to be addressing, because it's starving the fish. And as far as there was a question about some of the ASL going into Canada a little bit earlier, that's 8-6 in length. Fish have been getting smaller for the last 20 years. They were first noticed in the late 90s, getting smaller up in the headwaters in Teslin. And they've been steadily declining for well over 20, 25 years now. As fish get smaller, they carry less eggs, which reduces their productivity. And I also wanted to just bring up that Virgil Umpfenhauer has been very outspoken about getting what he calls the fat meters out onto the Yukon River, so we can start measuring the fat content of salmon at test sites. Because of the real possibility that these fish aren't storing up enough energy to make that long migration up into Canada. Prior to the years where we couldn't catch salmon anymore, the average, I was looking back through my records, the average size king salmon here at Eagle was between 10 and 10.5 pounds. So nothing like it was back in the late 90s, early 2000s. I think we're averaging right around 20 pounds then. And so that is one of the impacts of the fish basically not getting enough to eat out in the ocean, in my view. I think that's about all I have, Serena. Once again, I really appreciate hearing people's comments here, and I think we're all in the same boat. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Calling on anyone in District Y5, A, B, C, and D. That is Tanana. Oh, do I hear someone?
Serena, this is Ruby in Eagle. Can you hear me?
Oh, hi, Ruby. Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Hi. I haven't officially begun my surveys, but I just wanted to listen in this week and give a brief update. Like Andy said, the water levels have been pretty high, but it is starting to drop up here in Eagle. It's been very hot with temperatures in the upper 80s and very dry, very smoky, a lot of wildfire smoke in the air, especially the last few days with even some ash falling in the Eagle area. We're getting some much needed rain today. I did speak with one person who had fished a 4-inch net before
the 4th of July for whitefish, and he was catching a couple whitefish every day, which he was sharing with the village. And so that's really helping feed people some fresh food. Other than that, I don't have a whole lot to report. And I just wanted to also thank Therese for her comments from the Cusco Fish Commission. I really appreciated her in-depth report. So thank you, Therese.
Thank you, Ruby. We will relay the message to her. Again, calling on District Y5, A, B, C, and D. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute. Hearing none, we'll move on to District Y6, A, B, and C. That's Manly, Minto, Nanana, Fairbanks. Yes.
Hello.
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay, I had a comment to make as far as fisheries is concerned. I was going to ask what happened to the resolution that was passed at the Town and the Chiefs Conference in March.
I'm sorry, can we get your name and your community, please?
My name is Curtis Summer. I am in Tanana, Alaska.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, there was a resolution passed to halt all commercial fishing in Alaska waters until people can fish for king salmon in interior Alaska. I don't know what happened to that resolution that was passed, but I do know that bottom fishing in Alaska waters raises much sediment as what comes out of the entire world's rivers into the oceans, destroying the environment and the habitat of the life forms that exist on the bottom that provide food that goes up the food chain. That's 22 gigatons a year that's raised in Alaska waters itself. And a gigaton comes out to 1 billion tons. So that's 22 billion tons of sediment raised in Alaska waters each year. And it really don't make sense to me when natives are forced to halt fishing for their healthy food when they see non-natives fishing for profit, commercial fisheries, and throwing that same food fish overboard dead, wasted. Or even seeing people in Anchorage rotten fishing for king salmon while we are kept from fishing. You know, there's a lot of variables that go into why we don't have fish. You know, the ocean currents are slowing down, and some are predicting that they will completely stop in the future. But we should halt all fishing until people on the Yukon and Cusco and other parts can fish for king salmon. That's my comment.
Thank you. We'll move on to District Y, 6, A, B, and C, Manly, Minto, Nanana, and Fairbanks. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute.
Victor here.
Hi, Victor.
Hi.
Long time.
Yes. Hey, it's good to hear everybody and all the reports up and down the river. I got to hear my friends, Eric and the guy I asked and that time, Curtis. Good reports. And the girl from, Kuskokwim, Risa, I think her name was.
Yes,
she did great reports on the, bycatch and all that. But, I'm not sure somewhere in there that I missed out. Did they do an Area M report? They did the good work down there and everything, but I didn't hear nothing. But I was wondering about Area M.
She did not give a report on Area M. Actually, I have Matthew Keyes, who's the fisheries manager for Area M. He'll be on the call next week.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. Also, I just wanted to, you know, it's been hot up here in the United area, Fairbanks, real hot. And it's been going on for 2 weeks, 2 weeks. And, I was really worried about the fish making up the tuna and the salsa, especially the tuna because the power plants up there and the, right downtown Fairbanks and Wainwright. Or Wainwright. Good fish go up there. Well, that trip they went, then they hit that warmer water again. I just don't know if anybody monitors how far they're making it, or how many are making it. Anyway, are they using the observance, or are they using the sonar? And also, in all that warm weather, the river didn't rise like it usually did. I don't know what's going on with our glaciers or whatever. That's all I noticed. Okay. Thank you. Oh, yeah. I thought all those guys that I mentioned. Good to hear them.
Thank you, Victor. Can you repeat your question on the sonars again, please?
Oh, yeah. I know on the Chin River, they use a sonar with that's the little dam there. Sometimes they gotta pull the cow through. The water gets going and give us sediment, like you can't see the fish. I don't know what they're using there, but I don't even know if they have a person there. But I hope they do.
I'll throw that question over to any managers that would like to answer.
Yeah, Serena, this is Holly Carroll, Fish and Wildlife Service. So I actually checked in with Sport Fish Division over there at Fishing Game. They run the Chena and the Salsa projects. And I believe the latest update is that Chena is operating as a tower right now. They do want to put the sonars in, but they've been pretty short-staffed. And then I think the Salsa is mostly just going to be a tower this year.
Okay, thank you.
This is Matt Olson with Fish Game and Fairbanks. Just to add to what Holly said, they are out there counting right now, and it looks like they're estimating about 86 Chinook salmon past the Chena counting tower as of yesterday. So just to add that.
Okay, thank you. Do we have anyone else from District Y6, A, B, and C, Manly, Minto, Nanana, or Fairbanks? Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute. Hearing none, we'll move into Canada. Do we have anyone from Old Crow, Dawson, Whitehorse, Mayo, Pelly Crossing, Carmax, or Teslin on the line? I'll go ahead and open up the floor for any additional questions or comments. Just a reminder to press star 6 to unmute. Hearing none, thank you guys for joining today. Appreciate all the comments and questions. Thank you, Therese, for providing additional information on bycatch. We'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you.